Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 27th of May. This Sunday, the Libertarian Party nominated former Congressman Bob Barr as its candidate for president for the 2000 election. I am sure that we will emerge here with the strongest ticket in the history of the Libertarian Party, Barr said in his victory speech shortly after he was being selected as the party's nominee. I want everyone to remember we only have 163 days to win this election, and we cannot waste one single day. Third-party candidates are really not much more than an irritant to major party contenders. Libertarian candidates who captured fewer than 400,000 votes nationally in 2000 and 2004 have not done as well as Ralph Nader, who, as you'll remember, captured 2.8 million votes in 2000. But analysts are saying with the number of independent voters growing and the country in a mood for change, a third-party candidate could attract enough votes to tip the election in certain elections. John Zogby is saying that Bob Barr could get as much as 3% of the votes nationally. So what does that mean for the McCain campaign? What does it mean for the probable Democratic nominee Obama? We have a guest today who will talk about all of that, as you will as well. Stephen Scheer is with us. He is Dorothy H. and Edward C. Congdon Professor of Political Science at Carleton College. He founded and conducted Carleton in Washington program 9 times, and students intern there and meet with 60 prominent Washingtonians. He has written, published 9 books and authored many scholarly articles. One recent book by invitation only, The Rise of Exclusive Politics in the United States, which examines the reality behind America's current infatuation with participatory democracy. He's also author of A Postmodern Presidency, Bill Clinton's Legacy in American Politics, High Risk and Big Ambition, The Presidency of George W. Bush, and another recent book, You Call This an Election? America's Peculiar Democracy, and we are going to welcome phone calls for him. I would think we'll get a few. So call whenever you'd like. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. Professor Stephen Scheer, hello. Thanks so much for being with us.
Glad to be here, Kathleen.
What is your response to this statement? With the number of independent voters growing, the country's ready for a change, Bob Barr could attract enough votes to tip the election in certain states.
That is certainly possible. I think John Zogby's estimate of 3% nationwide for the Libertarian candidate is excessively optimistic. The highest the Libertarians have ever been is 1.1% in 1980. So that would, you know, it would have to triple that. But when you look state to state, I think there will be a number of states where it could be very close between McCain and Obama, and a few thousand votes could make the difference. Bob Barr may be one of the factors in producing those outcomes, yeah.
Can you make any comparisons between the political philosophies of Bob Barr and Ron Paul?
Yes, there are similarities. They are both libertarian, and you raise Ron Paul, I think, importantly, because Ron Paul has had significant support, particularly in caucus states on the Republican side this year. And the Ron Paul supporters are outspoken and highly motivated, and they really have libertarian inclinations. Now, will they stick with John McCain, over with whom they have, you know, a variety of differences on the issues, or might they be inclined to go with Bob Barr, who, after all, is a former GOP Congress member from Georgia? I think that's one of the, you've sort of, by raising the name Ron Paul, you put your finger on a significant potential problem for John McCain this year.
Mm-hmm. Why wasn't Ron Paul involved in all of this?
Ron Paul was approached by the Libertarian Party, but he has indicated that he wants to stay within the Republican Party and continue his fight there. I actually think if Ron Paul had decided to move to the Libertarian Party, he probably would have gotten the nomination, mm-hmm. and I think his impact could be even greater than Bob Barr's.
Do you think he will campaign for Bob Barr?
No. I think Ron Paul has shown no inclination to buck his party in the general election, and I expect he'll probably continue in that direction.
Now, tell me more about Bob Barr. He was, I believe, a six-term congressman, lost the seat when his area was redistricted. He's got he's an independent-minded guy, isn't he?
Yeah, well, he made a name for himself in the late 90s by being the foremost. He was one of the, I can remember getting a media call about this back in the late 90s, the first press conference by a member of Congress calling for the impeachment of Bill Clinton. And the person who had that press conference was Bob Barr. So he was very much a pioneer in pressing for the impeachment of Bill Clinton in the U.S. House back in 1998. And then he really split from the George W. Bush administration in the early 21st century after 9/11 because of the Patriot Act, surveillance issues, detainment issues at Guantanamo, on libertarian grounds. He basically was arguing that the Clinton the Bush administration was violating civil liberties and threatening civil liberties in their approach to the war on terror. And so I think that's what finally moved him out of Republican ranks. And now, of course, he's formally in the Libertarian Party.
News report, let's analyze these states. McCain, with his appeal to independence, could be a threat to win in Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. And he's been in Wisconsin this week and plans to return soon. They have gone Democratic in recent elections. You are quoted as saying this. Democratic gains in other parts of the country could make the race tight in states like Colorado, Florida, Georgia, Nevada, North Carolina, and Virginia, which Republicans have won, so that in these battlegrounds, a few thousand votes for a third-party contender could make a critical difference?
Could. Of course, you have to have Florida conditions, you know, where it is absolutely, totally a dead heat, and a few thousand votes are determinative. Remember that Ralph Nader got about 90,000 votes in Florida in 2000. And of course, that was far more than the margin by which George Bush carried that state. So even a small percentage, if it's a dead heat, is determinative. But out of all those states you mentioned, Kathleen, I think you have to identify a few where I think the probability of a libertarian impact is greatest. And I would identify three in the West, Colorado, Nevada, and New Mexico, all of which are really swing states in this election. And the reason I bring that up is because of a study done by the Cato Institute right after the 2004 election that it looked at some academic surveys and tried to identify who the libertarians are in the American electorate. And libertarian voters have the following characteristics. They tend to be concentrated in the Mountain and Pacific West. They tend to be male, well-educated, affluent, and they are heavily stock owners. Now, take that demographic and apply it to Colorado, Nevada, and New Mexico, and you could see that the possibility of a significant libertarian vote in those states where it could be very close between Obama and McCain suggests to me that those are the states where the libertarian impact could be the greatest.
So why go libertarian? What you describe sounds sort of Republican to me, isn't it?
Well, libertarians are a mix. I mean, they tend to be what I guess we would conventionally call a socially liberal now and economically conservative. They're big fans of markets. They want small government. All right, so far that sounds Republican. On the other hand, they want a non-interventionist foreign policy, and they want I guess you would say a libertarian approach to social issues such as gay marriage. Well, now that sounds like a liberal Democrat.
Right.
So they don't comfortably fit in either party.
Are their numbers growing?
Their numbers have been, you know, if it now it depends on how you define their numbers. I mean, if you look at the party membership of the Libertarian Party, it's remained formally pretty small, a few thousand people. But if you look at the libertarian segment of the American electorate, those with more or less some sort of libertarian orientation, You're talking about maybe 15, even as much as 20% of the overall electorate having libertarian inclinations. Now, of course, the vast majority of them vote either Democratic or Republican. Usually they vote Republican. What's interesting is that out of this libertarian group in the electorate, Republican presidential candidates have usually done quite well, winning 72 or more percent of the libertarian vote. But that was not true in 2004. Very interesting that George W. Bush actually only got about 59% of the libertarian vote in the electorate. And that was a big drop, and John Kerry actually increased the traditional Democratic percentage amongst libertarian-inclined voters, probably because of the civil liberties, war on terror, government spending issues. So it's not at all clear that libertarians are likely to vote for John McCain. McCain has some similarities to George W. Bush on the war on terror and on government spending and so forth. It's not clear to me that a lot of libertarian voters will find him that appealing a candidate.
Mm-hmm. And what about Obama? Does he stand to lose to libertarian voters, and if so, on what issues?
Oh, well, he'll lose on size of government issues. Obama is really not talking about radical downsizing of government, which is what libertarians want across the board. Obama is also not a big fan of global free trade, which is a very important value to libertarians. Mm. So many libertarians will view him as a big government candidate, perhaps a bigger government candidate than John McCain, and therefore there'll be limited appeal for them, I think, regarding Obama.
Mm-hmm. And this party has been around for how long?
Oh, well, it was founded in the early 70s. And the founder of the party, it's interesting, the founder of the party, it was actually founded in Colorado. I guess I come back to the swing state of Colorado again. It was actually founded in Colorado, and Bob Barr's vice presidential running mate is from Colorado. He's from Nevada, I believe. All of which indicates that those states are particularly important in terms of 2008.
Mm-hmm. We're going to welcome phone calls for you, and I'm sure that we'll have many of them. Our guest this hour is Professor Stephen Scheer. He's a professor of political science at Carleton College, and he is the author of a number of books on politics. We're looking at what happened on Sunday when the Libertarian Party selected Bob Barr as their 2008 presidential nominee. It came as a result of, I think, six rounds of voting, and we'll find out why there were so many rounds of voting and who else was on the table. Well, welcome your phone calls. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Milwaukee area callers 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. I think our email is up and running today. You can send an email at talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program this Tuesday, Madam Speaker Nancy Pelosi's Life, Times, and Rise to Power, Mark Sandalow, will be our guest. He spent 21 years on the staff of the San Francisco Chronicle, and he has traveled all over with Nancy Pelosi. This is an unauthorized biography of her. Extremely interesting. Okay, let's go to phone calls. 800-486-8655. Professor Stephen Scheer, professor of political science at Carleton College, is our guest, and we start our calls with Tom from Wausau. Hi, Tom.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
I have a question. It's just kind of an odd question, but if Hillary would lose to Obama, is it possible that she could go in as a third party and win the nomination for presidency, or win the presidency?
No, I think a couple things on that. First of all, I don't think Hillary's at all motivated to try a third party route, and I think one of the reasons that she isn't is that it's very difficult to envision winning the presidency as a third-party candidate. One of the big challenges is ballot access. That's decided by each state. Each state has rules for ballot access. For example, if you look at Bob Barr, the Libertarian candidate. Right now, he has got access to 28 state ballots for the fall election. And they're trying to get on the rest of the, you know, the other 22 state ballots. It looks like he won't be able to get on in South Dakota because of the difficulties of those rules. And it requires a lot of money and time to actually get on state ballots as a third-party candidate. And once you're on the ballot, of course, getting enough money and support in order to be competitive is a big hurdle. So there's a reason why we haven't seen a lot of third-party presidents. The system is really stacked against minor parties, and Bob Barr is going to confront that uncomfortable reality this fall.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I was just wondering if she'd have a shot at it, but well, thanks for the answer.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call, Tom.
Sure.
Dennis is next from Beloit. Hi, Dennis.
Yes, I'm enjoying the program. Perhaps the professor could mention, as you indicated that he would, some of the selection process for Congressman Barr to be the Libertarian candidate. I think a Libertarian candidate would make the election quite interesting. However, I question really whether Bob Barr is a Libertarian, certainly in areas of the Patriot Act. But as I've read while I was in Colorado recently, he apparently is... not pro-choice, so it seems as if he wants government out of certain areas but into other areas, and given the libertarians, as I understand them, I'm not one, they're rather independent, and they may not find Bob Barr, they may not be all that enthusiastic for Bob Barr, so I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, thanks for the call.
Yeah, well, I think caller makes a very good point, which is that Bob Barr in many ways fits the issue profile of a conservative Republican. He's not been known as a liberal on gay marriage and abortion, for example. His voting record in Congress does not indicate that he is opposed to defense spending in a large way either. And that may also suggest that to the extent that social conservatives who tend to vote Republican are not pleased with John McCain, they may find Bob Barr as an appealing alternative, which would, therefore, make Bob Barr more of a player in some of the more conservative states, such as Georgia, his home state. We'll have to watch that and see. I think the real problem for Bob Barr is resources. There was an essay by Harry Brown, who was the Libertarian Party nominee for president in 1996 and 2000 that appeared shortly after the 2004 election. And basically what Brown said is, you know, if we're ever to make a real impact, we're going to need either a real celebrity, a high-profile celebrity who can attract a lot of attention, or much more money than we've had before. In 2004, the Libertarians only spent about $1 million. On a nationwide campaign, and they only received about a third of a percent of the total national vote. What Brown argues is that you need $20 or $30 million, preferably with a national celebrity. Well, I think it's going to be hard for Bob Barr to raise that much money, and I'm not sure he really qualifies as a, shall we say, a Schwarzenegger-style national celebrity at this
point.
So there are a number of problems that he faces as he proceeds to the November election.
There were six rounds of voting on Sunday afternoon. He obviously wasn't the unanimous choice. Let's nominate this guy right away. Who else was in contention?
Oh, well, in the first ballot, he was only ahead by one vote and was not close to a majority. He had 153 votes. Mary Ruart had 152. Wayne Allen Root, who became his vice presidential nominee, 123. And then voters or listeners will be interested to hear, finishing fourth was a former Democratic candidate for president in 2008. Yes, 2008. Former Alaska Senator Mike Gravel.
Oh, Mike Gravel, yeah.
Who had switched parties and is running as a Libertarian. So he finished fourth with 71 votes.
Huh.
So Barr was well short of a majority until, you know, a variety of candidates dropped out. And finally, on the sixth ballot, he won but with only 51.8% of the final vote. So, the, you know, the previous caller's point, Kathleen, that libertarians may not be unified around Barr may be validated by the fact that he won the nomination after six ballots by a very narrow margin.
Mm-hmm. Will they go out and campaign for him? Will there be a big campaign going on?
Well, you know, they lack the resources, and if they're internally divided about their nominee, that doesn't augur well for the fall. But, you know, we'll have to wait and see. One of the other things I wanted to note about the Libertarians' viability in 2008 is relates to a recent John Zogby poll. Zogby did a poll where he put McCain, Obama, Nader, and Bob Barr on the ballot, you know, for the respondents, and had them pick. And in that situation, I think Barr got 3 or 4% of respondents. But that's not a realistic, I think, depiction of the choice they'll face in November. First, they won't hear much about Barr between now and November compared to the other two candidates. And second of all, when you get, you'll remember this, when you get in the polling booth, there are a lot of candidates listed, and it's a long list. And Bob Barr will not be that salient to people as he was in a question where he was one of four candidates. So I think translating the 3 or 4% from the Zogby poll to 3 or 4% in the national election is, for those reasons, a dubious enterprise.
Yeah, and what about Nader? How well do you expect him to do?
Well, what's interesting about Nader is how poorly he did in 2004 after his, I would say, substantial impact in 2000. I think that the people who were inclined to vote for Nader in 2000, and some of them were liberal Democrats who were upset with Al Gore, have probably learned their lesson from 2000 to 2004. And I would expect that Nader will probably perform at a 2004 level rather than at his 2000 level, and he'll be lucky to get a million votes nationwide.
Hmm. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. And you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest is Professor Stephen Scheer. He is a professor of political science at Carleton College and has taught widely in American politics. He's taught about Congress, the presidency, parties and interest groups, political rhetoric. And he is with us and has also written extensively as a media commentator. We're talking about the selection of Bob Barr by the Libertarian Party as their candidate for president for the 2008 election. And we can move into other 2008 election news as well, if you'd like. It's entirely up to you. I'm particularly interested. We have a very vociferous group of Ron Paul supporters who have called over the months, and I'm interested in what you think about Bob Barr. If it couldn't be Ron Paul for you, are you excited about the candidacy of Bob Barr as a libertarian? Will you enthusiastically support him, or are you wishy-washy about him? We welcome your calls. We go to Dana next from Minneapolis. Hi, Dana. Or Dana.
Dana.
Dana. Hi, Dana.
Hi. My question for Professor Scheer is one kind of political philosophy vis-a-vis libertarians as opposed to specific candidates, Bob Barr versus Ron Paul or what have you. It just seems to me that they have a philosophy, a we versus them, us versus them philosophy, where we are ordinary citizens and the them are the big government, some foreign entity, as if it were was not part of we the people. And it seems to fly in the face of what we learned back in the day in civics class, that government is, in fact, in the United States, we the people. And there seems to be no effort by libertarians to make government be a we by the people, of the people, for the people kind of structure.
Yeah, I think that you've described some aspects of the libertarian approach quite accurately, in that they are uniformly suspicious of government in all of its manifestations and want small government in every sense of the word, hence their emphasis upon liberty over what I gather the caller is suggesting, a community, which, and I think the problem with that appeal has been that, well, I guess it's reflected in the caller's comments, that many voters believe that there are some common purposes that government must fulfill, both domestically and in terms of international affairs, that libertarians simply don't believe government should be pursuing. And I think that's helped to limit the appeal of libertarianism to a small percentage of the overall population.
It would also seem to me that in the last 8 years, we have seen the lack of government regulation be a very detrimental effect to the common good, whether that be in the housing crisis, the relief crisis on the Gulf Coast, or a number of other things in which a government routinely failed to do what they are supposed to do. And I would think that that particular feeling is very much in the public's mind coming into the November election.
Yeah, I think the public believes that government has not been functioning well lately. They believe the nation's on the wrong track, and they would like, I think, many in the public would like the government to find ways of solving certain problems before the country. And libertarians generally believe that problems are best solved not by government, but by private citizens operating on the basis of their own liberties. And it's been hard to make that sale to a lot of voters.
Mm-hmm. The number is astounding of Americans who think we're on the wrong track. Isn't it somewhere like 81% now?
Yeah, I think I saw 82%.
Oh, my.
Again, the problem there, Kathleen, is you have to disaggregate it. I mean, what does wrong track mean? Well, it means very different things to very different people. I'm certain amongst that 82% is a large group of philosophical conservatives who believe that gay marriage and big government are the problem. And then there's a large group of political liberals who believe that the war in Iraq and the Patriot Act are a big part of the problem. And then there's a larger group of, I don't know if it's larger, but another group of citizens who aren't particularly ideological, who are upset about the economy and gas prices. So it's one of those things. Are you unhappy? Okay, yes. But how? For what reasons are you unhappy? Mm-hmm. When you begin to examine that, you see how we get big political arguments about an unpleasant national situation. There's no consensus on the source of the problem.
Right. Thanks, Dana, for your call. We go to Mike from Elkhart Lake next. Hi, Mike.
Hi. My question is, you know, with the Ron Paul factor you were talking about and Bob Barr and then the Constitution Party and Chuck Baldwin, he was a big Ron Paul supporter. And do you think those third party, the ideas of the third party candidates that were pre-lined up with Ron Paul will cause either of the two major party candidates to try to go after those voters and start to say some things that might sound Ron Paul-esque, or, you know, if they're going to try to sway those voters to their side?
Yeah, that's a good question. Two problems with that approach if you're an Obama or a McCain. First of all, the number of voters who are thinking along those lines is small, and so you have to think about, if I tailor an appeal to them, what other voters might I lose by tailoring such an appeal? Second of all, the people who are Ron Paul and Bob Barr supporters tend to have pretty strong ideological principles and are not easily convinced by the rhetoric of a candidate whom they haven't embraced ideologically. So because of the small numbers, the likelihood that if you appeal to them, you may lose other voters, and the fact that they're not that persuadable, I'm not sure that you'll see Obama or McCain really making an aggressive appeal to libertarian voters.
All right, thanks.
Thank you, Mike. We go to Matt from Lake Geneva. Hi, Matt.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been a Libertarian Party member before and an activist, and suffered the frustration of trying to work in a party that doesn't have much traction. And so I became pretty excited about the Ron Paul campaign because I think he's the real deal. He is really my kind of guy. He is a libertarian, a limited government conservative, and you know, but pretty socially liberal on a lot of issues like the war on drugs and so forth. So it's right in there with me. But I think that there's still quite a bit of activity around Ron Paul that people wouldn't know about. You know, it's not reported in the mainstream media. And I think that's going to draw away from the Libertarian Party activity, and particularly because Ron Paul has a lot of the young people that you would want to bring into politics. They are still kind of watching Ron Paul.
Meaning what? That he's thinking a third party run, Matt? Or?
Oh, no, I don't think so. I think there's tremendous activity inside the Republican Party that's internal going on right now that still has to do with Ron Paul. There's quite a convention fight going on at this very moment, with the Republican Party actually kind of collapsing in on itself with authoritarian measures to try to quell this Ron Paul uprising that's going on inside the state conventions and trying to move its way towards the national convention. Because you'll remember that Barry Goldwater was nothing until the convention, and young Goldwaterites actually created a demonstration on the floor of the Republican convention, and Goldwater was able to rise up just on the basis of that protest at the convention floor. That's happening with Ron Paul right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Professor?
I think that the Ron Paul movement is much bigger than the Bob Barr candidacy and the current activities of the Libertarian Party itself. When you look at the amount of money Ron Paul has raised, it's far more than the Libertarians have raised. The amount of grassroots activism surrounding the Paul candidacy, it's much larger than anything that's happened within the Libertarian Party. And so if you're looking for a manifestation of a libertarian orientation in national politics in 2008, there is no bigger manifestation of that than the Ron Paul candidacy.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Matt. Do you have a way you're going at this point? Are you still there, Matt? Matt's gone. We're welcoming phone calls, and here's how you reach our conversation, 800-486-8655. Professor Stephen Scheer is our guest, professor of political science at Carleton College in Minnesota, and we're talking about the announcement on Sunday of this week that the Libertarian Party has selected Bob Barr as the 2008 presidential nominee and how that would play into the general election. We have two third-party candidates, Ralph Nader and now Bob Barr, and who does it hurt and who does it help? Is it too early to tell? 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. If you'd like to send an email, that address is talk@wpr.org. I do want to move for just a few minutes into the decision that will be made, I believe, this weekend about what to do with Florida and Michigan voters for the Democrats, which has been a big hullabaloo for quite some time now. Which way are they likely to decide this? And ask our guest as well, which is something that's still on the table, if there is any chance that Senator Barack Obama could not be the Democratic nominee. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Here's our number again, 800-486-8655. A reminder, the second hour of the program, we'll be talking about Nancy Pelosi with the author of Madam Speaker, Nancy Pelosi's Lifetimes and Rise to Power. Mike Sandalo will be with us. Mike spent 21 years on the staff of the San Francisco Chronicle and the last 10 years as the paper's Washington bureau chief. He will be with us to talk about Madam Speaker. Two more phone calls now. Let's go to Cheryl from Iron Mountain, Michigan. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, Kathleen. Hi to your guest. I had, you know, it's real rare that I don't listen to Wisconsin Public Radio, but on the off chance one time I was listening to one of the XM channels and I heard Ron Paul being interviewed. And they were asking him, well, why don't, you know, you have such libertarian leanings, why aren't you, you know, heading up the Libertarian Party and running as their candidate? And you know what his very concise, very logical, practical answer was?
What?
Because they don't, the media doesn't cover third-party candidates.
Oh.
You know, if you stay with the mainstream, you get a lot of coverage. He said, as a libertarian, I would never have been up on the stage during the Republican debates or any other debate that's coming. He said, you know, you have to sort of stay with the mainstream and introduce these other kinds of ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my comment, and I'll take your guests, any comments he may have off the air.
Thanks, Cheryl. Thanks for the call.
Well, that makes perfect sense to me. I mean, if you examine the media coverage of minor parties, it is very, very scant. And basically, Kathleen, it's because minor parties don't win elections.
Right.
You know, libertarians do claim about 600 office holders nationwide, but, you know, there are tens and tens of thousands of public offices to be held in America, and it's 600 is a very small percentage. Compare that to the percentage of offices held by Democratic and Republican parties, and it's very tiny. And that's basically what the media follows. So whoever has power gets attention, and the major parties have power.
Mm-hmm. I was interested that Barr has Ross Perot's campaign manager as his campaign manager.
Yes, Russ Verney, who worked for the Perot campaign. Now, Perot, why we talk about third parties, we should at least mention Perot. Perot was a phenomenon. He did get 19% of the vote in 1992, and in 1996 got about 9% of the vote, which is the largest performance, I think, since Bob La Follette back in 1924. Wisconsin people may remember that, or at least have heard of it. How did Perot do it? Well, Harry Brown, who was the Libertarian candidate, in his essay says one of the ways to make a real impact is to be a billionaire, you know, and to be able to throw tens of millions of dollars into a race.
Yeah.
Well, when you have resources like that, the media understands that you have potential impact, and they give you attention. And I think that helps to explain a lot of the Perot phenomenon.
Thank you, Cheryl, for your call. Let's go to Bill, who's driving through Wisconsin. He's from Mohawk, New York. Hi, Bill.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I just have a comment or two. I think that Bob Barr and Ralph Nader and, for that matter, even Ron Paul should take all the money that they've accumulated or hope to have donated to them and donate it to earthquake relief, because really, realistically, I don't think any of them have a chance of being elected president, and I think it's a colossal waste of money.
Well, he is right that the probability that they will get elected president is minute. On the other hand, you know, it's not. It would be a mistake to indicate that third parties make no difference over the course of American history, because often the ideas generated by third parties get adopted by one of the two major parties. And the Populist Party of the 1890s had their agenda taken over by the Democratic Party. The progressives of the 19-teens and 20s had a number of their ideas adopted by Democrats in the 1930s. So down the road, there can be an impact, even if in the short term they lose an election by a whopping margin.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that may be true, but I think there's better ways for them to get their opinions and their policies across. And also, I think that they're probably... Some of them are hoping for some kind of matching funds, which, you know, I don't want to see any of my tax dollars go to that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think much of the whole election process, to be perfectly honest, I don't think it has anything to do with the will of the people. I'm a registered independent voter from New York, and that pretty much cuts me right out of the whole run, and I can't vote in any primaries. And, you know, the 2000 election pretty much showed that the popular vote means nothing, so I'm really on the fence as to whether I'll even vote. I always have voted, but I don't think much of the prospects of it anymore.
You don't have a candidate who excites you, Bill?
No, not at all.
Hmm.
Well, of course, if Bill moved to Wisconsin, he could vote in primaries as an independent.
Right. Right. You need to move to Wisconsin, Bill. You can vote in our primaries.
The Democratic contenders remind me of two baby birds in the nest pecking each other to death for a worm from their mother. And John McCain, I don't know, every time I hear him talk, he sounds like he's talking to preschoolers.
Okay. Singularly uninspired, Bill, as this go around. Thanks very much for the call. Let's spend a few minutes on the Democrats. They're having this big meeting this weekend to figure out who's going to be seated in terms of Florida and Michigan delegates. It's kind of a battle here. Can you tell me how they're going to make that decision?
Oh, well, good. Well, they're facing a lot of pressures. Let me just set the situation. It looks like Barack Obama's about 49 delegates short of what he claims he'll need in order to be nominated. But that his calculations leave out Florida and Michigan. If you include Florida and Michigan, he's still a few hundred delegates away from a nomination. On the other hand, what do you do with Florida and Michigan? Because Florida and Michigan both violated party rules by scheduling their primary so early, and in Michigan, Hillary Clinton was the only candidate on the ballot. It's hard to see how Michigan, for example, can be translated directly into seating the delegates, given the flawed process. The Clinton people clearly want Florida and Michigan in play because these are actually two states where Hillary Clinton did well, and should they, and this is unlikely, have a revote, she would probably do well. So it's not at all clear what sort of deal will be worked out about Florida and Michigan. If Obama agrees to some sort of compromise plan with Florida and Michigan, I think he'll probably realize some delegates out of it and be closer to the nomination. I think it's still a long shot for Hillary Clinton to be able to become the nominee. How she could work a deal on Florida and Michigan to propel her in front of Obama escapes me. So basically, on May 31st, there'll be a committee meeting, a party committee meeting, where they'll be attempting to figure out this problem, and it's not obvious what the solution will be. I think Democrats want Florida and Michigan seated at the national convention, but the circumstances under which that would happen are far from clear right now.
Yeah. It is hard to make a case. Some would say it's hard to make a case for both, but it is very hard, it seems to me, to make a case for Michigan when you only had Hillary Clinton on the ballot. I mean, that's not quite Democratic, is it?
No, and there have been a variety of options considered, such as, well, perhaps we should have a caucus system and have that produce delegates for the candidates, or a revote. But the state party has been unable to come together in agreement on any of those alternatives. So Michigan is a real head-scratcher. What to do? One idea is that both states get half the number of delegates that they had that they were originally apportioned as a penalty, and then can decide internally how to apportion them amongst candidates. That's still not a very satisfactory solution, but time is running out, and if Democrats want to work out an arrangement with Florida and Michigan, it's probably going to look a bit messy.
Yeah. What do you think is fair, Professor Scheer?
Well, what would work? You know, I think what would have worked, my idea is already too late, which is a revote. You know, you probably needed to revote in Florida and Michigan, but it looks like that bird has flown and it's too late to do that. So probably what they're going to work out is some sort of delegate penalty and then allocation amongst the candidates. And I think that's a pretty sorry solution, but it may be the only one available.
Do you think this thing is going to be over by June 3rd, or will it go all the way to the convention?
Well, that really depends on what the Clinton campaign wants to do, whether they consider it worthwhile to press this all the way through to August. And I don't have any special insight into what Bill, Hillary, and their managers are thinking about that. I don't think it's in Obama's hands. He has to wait and sort of see what the Clinton people decide to do. If Hillary Clinton wins a big win in Puerto Rico, which is possible, she may feel heartened by that and be willing to stay in through the summer. Keep in mind, Kathleen, that it's not unusual for candidates, even when they're well behind, to stay in all the way to the convention. Ted Kennedy was way behind in 1980, but stayed in and was nominated at the convention and lost on the first ballot to President Carter. Gary Hart, likewise, stayed in all the way in 1984, even though he was well behind Walter Mondale. So it's quite possible the Clinton people will see no reason to end this before the convention itself.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, the reason would be so they'd have more time to be involved in a national campaign against John McCain, which
right.
I'm sure many Democrats would say would be a good thing.
Well, I think that's true, but, I think one thing to note is that some national polls indicate that Hillary Clinton is more competitive than Barack Obama against John McCain, and I think that mm-hmm. gives the Clinton people another argument to use with superdelegates, many of whom haven't formally declared yet, and also gives them hope that come the end of August, there may be a real chance for them because she'll be performing better in the polls than Obama.
Mm-hmm. We still have time for some phone calls. If you'd like to join our conversation, our number is 800-486-8655. We've started the conversation with discussion of the Libertarian Party selecting Bob Barr as their 2008 presidential nominee. It was done in six ballots, six rounds of voting on Sunday afternoon, and we're looking at how that will affect primarily the McCain campaign, but also the Obama campaign. Welcome to your phone calls. We're moving into a couple other subjects as we near the end of the hour, and that's the meeting this week to determine what to do with those delegates from Florida and from Michigan, whether or not this will go to the convention. Those of you who have been Ron Paul fans, and I know there are many of them because we've heard from you over the many months we've been talking politics, does the nomination of Bob Barr excite you? Would you be likely to vote for him? We certainly welcome your thoughts on all of this in our remaining few minutes. 800-486-8655 is the number. Our guest is Professor Stephen Scheer. He is Dorothy H. and Edward C. Congdon Professor of Political Science at Carleton College. He has taught widely in American politics, courses on Congress, the presidency, parties and interest groups, political rhetoric, America's future, and public policy. Has written nine books, By Invitation Only, The Rise of Exclusive Politics in the United States, a book on Bill Clinton's legacy in American politics, A Postmodern Presidency, High Risk and Big Ambition, The Presidency of George W. Bush, and another recent book, You Call This an Election? America's Peculiar Democracy. So we have time for a few more of your phone calls. Gary is next from Fitchburg. Hi, Gary.
Good morning. I applaud the Libertarian Party. My concern is, of course, that, there's not enough horsepower there to get the job done. My other concern is the fact that the corporate media has given Obama such a free ride up until recently. And my feeling is, and this is probably going to be branded a conspiracy theory, but keep in mind some conspiracy theories are absolutely correct. My feeling is Obama was brought literally out of nowhere almost and talked about on the corporate media as this rock star. He was brought forward by the master planners specifically to split the Democratic Party, to stop Hillary Clinton from becoming president, and to facilitate the election of John McCain. And that's been accomplished. The many of the black population who really used to revere the Clintons now hate the Clintons' guts, and a bunch of the Clinton supporters will not vote for Obama. So the job has been accomplished. If we get Obama as the nominee, he's going to go down in flames because the same corporate media will turn on him. They gave him a free ride, will turn on him and drive him into the ground.
Professor Scheer.
Yeah, interesting. I think there are several things that he said that, in fact, did occur this year. I think the early coverage of Obama was not very critical or thorough. I also think timing's important in politics. The disclosures about William Ayers and Reverend Wright, if they had occurred in November, December, January, probably would have affected Obama negatively early in the process and helped Hillary Clinton. As it was, I think they came too late to really change the trajectory of the nomination process, which I think strongly favors Barack Obama at this point. Also, I think that the fight between Clinton and Obama has been an unexpected plus for the GOP and for John McCain. That doesn't mean that John McCain is the favorite in this election, because the environment generally of public opinion is pretty anti-Republican right now on a variety of issues. Kathleen brought up the wrong track issue. The Republicans, in terms of party identification, are about 10 percentage points behind Democrats right now. People who want to vote for a generic Democrat for president are about 15% more in number than those who want to vote for a generic Republican. All of those are headwinds against John McCain. What's happened in the last 6 months is that the Democratic Party and its internal conflicts has given John McCain's and Republicans new hope for the presidency. And that's what makes this the rest of this year really entirely unpredictable. One could develop a scenario where Clinton or Obama or McCain becomes president. I'm not placing any bets right now.
We'll talk to you again further down the road. Thank you so much for being with us. I really enjoyed the hour.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you. Professor Stephen Scheer, Dorothy H. and Edward C. Congdon, Professor of Political Science at Carleton College. And we thank him for joining us to initially talk about the Libertarians' nomination of Bob Barr as the 2008 presidential nominee, which happened a couple days ago, and then to branch into a few other discussions of the Democratic race and also John McCain. So that was a good hour, huh? Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, to John Tretter for on-air production here in Milwaukee. We're going to continue our Tuesday conversation in just a few moments here on the Ideas Network.